A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a bunch of questions, some good ones, some from a week ago, so apologies that it's taken us this long to ask. Cameron Williams emailed in to podcast@theexchange.co.uk. He says, which advanced football stats are best for analysing and predicting player productivity? In other words, if you were asked to analyse player X, what would you first look to gauge how good they are relative to others? Nathan, I mean, you are literally asked to analyse player X, kind of what you do on the side. So what advanced stats do you tend to use?
It kind of means what you mean by advanced, right? Because if you're opening that up to like something that's like progressive pass distance and stuff like that, those are all very good. But if you're using advanced to sort of mean predictive, as in not what they're actually so much doing as to what you might expect them to do in the future, then expected goals and working backwards from there are really the only thing on their level. All attempts at sort of doing really clever stuff like that with defensive actions and passing actions are still falling short. And that's because, you know, football is a shooting game and the goals are the most important thing, yeah. Obviously. But it's there are so many, many more moving pieces in every other aspect of the game. And you can do a lot to get around that. And you can do a lot by helping with the eye test, of course. But really, and you can do a lot working backwards from expected goals. There are models I've seen and I've used that are built entirely backwards from expected goals, where you say, okay, here is the expected the contribution towards expected goals that this player is putting in through their tackling. I will have to find something more longer form to build what that means. That's a bit complicated. But I think you get the vague idea of what I'm getting at there. The XG build-up and XG chain stuff I'm not very big on, which is not a completely dissimilar idea. I've got a lot of time for expected assists. Opta, and this happened on our podcast, and I was sort of a bit too dumbfounded and confused to sort of pick up with what was going on. Expected assist used to mean, like you pass to someone who takes a shot and that has an expected goal value, and then you get the expected assist value, and then Opta have tried to change it to this thing where every single pass could have led to a shot and therefore that has an expected assist value. So they changed what used to be expected assist to expected goals assisted. Man, it's a whole mess. But I think looking at who passes for shots is very useful. I like expected assists. But really, those two are sort of the standout still. And that's only really good for a handful of different roles. So what defenders are doing in terms of expected goals, what midfielders are doing in terms of expected goals. It can be useful for keepers because you work backwards from what we were discussing before with Lloris and post-shot expected goals and say, here's how many saves he's making, or here's how many goals he's not conceding based on the quality of shots that he's facing. That can be quite useful. But that's the key stat, but it's also quite limited in terms of which players it's useful for. So as Cameron has said, you have to look at a mosaic even of various different stats and say, here, you know, passing is vaguely a strength for him, although his pass length maybe isn't very good. He's doing it more through short passes, but his defensive contribution is poor. But he's getting shots in good areas, all that kind of stuff. It's a combination, isn't it?
It's interesting. Cameron makes the points about Ben Davis, actually. He says he finds him, he'd like to find a way to measure him against other left backs, but appreciating that we play a different style of football to other teams. And I mean, he says that he finds Ben Davis average at best, but he'd like to almost be able to prove that. And we had a conversation last week, Nathan, about Mourinho gaming statistical systems with the way that he plays in terms of getting ahead in a match and then managing it in a way that means we're not fulfilling what our expected goals might have been, were he a different type of manager. But it's the same for players as well, right? I mean, I'm thinking of Aurier in particular. He must be a bit of a rule breaker in terms of how you gauge his performance statistically, because whilst he's a right back by trade, he's not often played right back this season. He's mainly been a right winger. For at least like 30% of the season, he's been very advanced on the right. And he's the aim of Aurier, or our use of Aurier, is to get him the ball high up the pitch and he whips in crosses. He like had 117 unsuccessful crosses this year, which was just insane to me. But does that make things difficult? And how are the stats companies working to kind of create an even playing field?
Well, it goes back to that mosaic. Oh my God, I can't say that word. It goes back to that combination thing where you have to you don't say on a scale of fullback goodness, Ben Davies is a 6 and Aurier is a 6.5. You have to say, I mean, yes, you can start with the idea of what a fullback is meant to do and how they compare with each other. But then you say, okay, look, we look at this profile and we see that Ben Davies is pretty decent defensively and a smart and considered passer of the ball, but he's not carrying the ball any distance and he's not a very present crosser, whereas Serge Aurier has sort of quite good output in terms of active defensive actions, but also makes mistakes with those actions. And he's a volume attacker. He's getting in a high number of crosses that are a consistent sort of medium low quality, but eventually they pay off. And also he's a good carrier and dribbler of the ball as well. Again, all of all of those things for both those players are present both in the data and in the eye test.
Final thing from Cameron is just that he references the book Moneyball by Michael Lewis, is it? I want to say Michael Lewis. Yes, Michael Lewis. I've not read the book, but I've seen the movie and it's awesome. Bardi, I imagine you've read Moneyball.
No, I haven't read it, actually, because of my disdain to football statistics. No, I haven't. I was going to say, the only way to judge a player is their surname. If they got a vowel at the end of it, then they're a good footballer. Check out their nationality.
Expected vowels.
No, I haven't read the book. I don't know, for some reason, that one and Soccer Economics, those kind of books have steered. I don't know, they just haven't landed on my pile at the moment. I'm reading a good book at the moment regarding football, but I'll tell more about that when I'm a bit deeper into it.
Ooh. Cool. So, Tottenham Tim, who is Tim Odgin, Twitter, he says, what will the impact be of losing Ricardo and bringing in Ledley to replace him? Buddy, you touched on this earlier.
I can't tell you exactly what Ricardo done, but what I can say is we talked about goodwill and everything else. By putting Ledley King alongside him, it automatically gets the fans on your side, which is always a good thing. There have been whisperings, as I mentioned, about Ledley King's impact already. Whether or not we can attribute that to what he's done, we have to wait and see. But I like Ledley King, and I hope this is the start of a coaching career, and I hope he fulfills his potential and goes on to be a great manager, because unfortunately injuries stopped him from becoming a great, great footballer. But other than that, I don't have any insight into Ledley King's methods or anything like that.
Sure, no, that's understandable. He's so early in his career. He briefly did some coaching for the under-18s, and he obviously took his coaching badges, but he was performing an ambassadorial role for the club for what's felt like years. So he's always been involved with Spurs. And it kind of just feels like part of the furniture. But I'm sure he's... You'd imagine that a player who was as talented as Ledley King will be well respected by the players. And he always comes across as just the nicest man. So that'll help. But I'm also just pleased that we're giving an opportunity to a young black coach, which is great. I mean, that's good news as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Nathan, any insight from you? Did you know much about what... is it Formosino? Is that how you pronounce his surname?
Literally no idea who he was or what he did.
Tactical analyst, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a vague idea of what tactical analysis is. but specifically, you know, to what level and detail and importance he did it. And also, you know, how Ledley King may or may not perform in that role, I have no idea. I would assume that neither Mourinho nor Levy would be the type to simply give him a job because of his relationship with the club.
Yeah.
I think he would, I assume fairly confidently, that he would have had to have achieved that on merit of the other work that he's been doing. And as you say, I think you made a great point about giving opportunities to black coaches, which is something that this sport is really, really failing, especially in this country, but elsewhere as well, pretty horrifically to do. So, yeah, you know, and he's a Tottenham legend, so it's great to see that. But very hard to have any idea either how we expect him to do or how well he is doing down the line. We just have to wait and see where he goes, you know, in a couple of years' time, I guess.
Mm. Question from Ray Guilford. He says, would you discuss the possibility of Zaha? He says, selling Lamela and Lucas seems like a no-brainer to me, and replacing with Zaha. He counts as homegrown, has Premier League experience, can cover Son and Kane if needed. Especially the way Jose plays at the moment, an attack of Son, Kane, Zaha looks a great way to go forward. This can allow Bergwijn to blend slowly and share the minutes with them. What do you think, Bardi? Would Zaha excite you?
I mean, hold up. First of all, pronunciations in this podcast are crazy.
What it's not
Zaha, it's Zaha. Is that what you were saying, Wendy? Is that correct?
I don't know how I said it. I thought I Zaha. Really self-conscious now.
Anyway,
you were
Zaha.
Talking about Crystal Palace's Zaha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're talking about Zaha and
Wilfred.
Yeah, I'm leaving all of this in, by the way, just so you're taking a second of this out.
No, I think it's good to have that here as a
public shaming.
Exactly. So Zaha fits the model of what we've been talking about, a player who can play central, he has physical attributes, he's a big chap, he can play through the middle, he can play wide. I just think the price will be the major stumbling block here. I don't think we're gonna spend £75 million pounds on him.
He's a big chap.
He's tall. Exactly, that's what I mean by a big
long
chap.
Legs.
He's 6 foot.
Wide gait.
Yeah, he's
that really tickled me. Sorry.
He's a big chap.
He's a big old chap. He's a big unit. I don't think Zaha is quite as good as he seems from Match of the Day, to be honest. He's clearly very good. I don't think he's the level we want to be punching. I think Bergwijn's better, certainly long term. I also don't think he's much of a Mourinho player. He doesn't work back much, so he's way more Son than Lucas. And we know that Mourinho certainly likes balance in his front three from what we've seen so far. So if you've got Son, who's going to play high up on the left and not track back a great deal, he wants Lucas on the right to be doing a lot of donkey work back around the halfway line. I'm not sure that Zaha would be up for that, to be honest. Plus, we don't need more wingers.
Yeah, and on a kind of a human level, I feel a little bit sorry for him because...
Yeah, man, he's stuck.
He's properly stuck. And Palace aren't a bad team. They're not very good, but they're not a bad team. I don't think they're in any danger of getting relegated. Hodgson is an effective manager. But I think he needs to come to a Spurs or go to Arsenal. He's not going to get like Man United, Liverpool.
Everton. Go to Everton, Wilfred.
Yeah, but then it just becomes... what's his name? They signed the other. Balassi becomes Balassi 0.2. Everton is, at the moment, even under Ancelotti, is a bit of a graveyard, and I can understand why Højbjerg didn't want to go there.
Yeah, you're right. He's stuck. He needs to make a move. And I suspect he'll be priced out of the market this summer and may end up staying again.
Yep.
Yeah, his career hasn't quite panned out the way I think he thought it would at one point. He got that move to Man U. And then,
Here's what I said, I think, about Zaha last summer. I said something like, every year we get linked to Zaha, every year he gets older, and every year he signs a new expensive 5-year contract. Every year it's a more and more ridiculous transfer, and yet we continue to be linked with him. That was a year ago, and it only gets more and more ridiculous.
It's just the fact that he's a good player, and he's at a team which he's better than, so... It's just one of those. Until he moves somewhere, it could continue to be linked until he's probably into his 30s.
Yeah. Good talking point, though. Thanks, Ray, for that.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Daryl Brugink on our Facebook page, our Extra Inch Facebook page, he says, if Aurier departs and is not replaced with an attacking fullback, does that open the door to Sessegnon at left back? Or is Mourinho married to Ben Davies? Mm-hmm. Ben Davies / Davis, sorry. What
Gentle
do you think,
Ben.
Buddy? Gentle Ben.
I mean, we have seen Mourinho experiment with Sessegnon at left back as the kind of more attacking fullback. I don't know. Our friends at The Athletic did an article recently on Davis's lack of productivity in the final third. I don't mind Davis. I think as an alternative to an attacking fullback, I think he has some future at the club. I think if Aurier departs, I think we would definitely go into the market and sign a better version of Aurier.
I saw that article because someone who has an Athletic account kindly shared it with me, and I thought it was interesting, actually. I really thought it was interesting to see just how much worse our output from our fullbacks is. Like, I thought it was bad. It's worse than bad. It's gone through the floor compared to what it was when Walker and Rose were peaking. I don't think that's just down to the style of football. I think it's also the ability of the players. And as much as I think right back is an absolute huge priority, we also need to do something about left back. And if doing something about left back is starting to give a run of games to Sessegnon or Sirkin or signing another left back, then I'm all for it. Because although I think Ben Davis is a good person and I don't think he's a terrible player, I said before that I think fullback should be a sword and not a shield, and I see him very much as a shield.
Yeah, I think...
And we need to upgrade.
I think we'll see if Ben Davies takes the number 3 shirt, then I think we're all in trouble. So that's how I would judge it.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to circle back to another part of Cameron Williams' email, because I've just noticed that it will actually make an interesting talking point. So he says, most of the tactics are way over my head, but one big change seems to be keeper distribution and playing out from the back. Interestingly, this is similar to the NFL strategy of not punting and the baseball strategy of not making outs on purpose via sacrifice bunts, low percentage steals. They're all related to keeping the ball. Do you think counter-attacking football is a statistically worse strategy than people thought? What do you think, Nathan?
A statistically worse strategy. No. But also, yes. There's definitely been a trend over the last decade and a half towards a more possession-focused football, away from an uncontrolled kind of football, or just not fully controlled kind of football, where you have the ball and you attack for a bit, and then maybe we'll have the ball and we'll have a go at it for a while, and now it's okay, we want all of the ball all of the time, and the response to that is okay, well, we're gonna make you pay for that by defending with all 11 players and attacking behind very occasionally. And then it's okay, well, we're going to get better at preventing you from having even those two attacks through our pressing game. And then it's, well, okay, we're going to get better at winning the ball higher off your defenders and attacking into space. We will always be stuck in this continual back and forth between the game that is more about keeping the ball and the game that is more about allowing the opposition to have the ball. And I think that for the majority of the time, the tactical meta will favour the team who has a little more of the ball, but there will always be a new tweak. There will always be a new way of counterattacking, a new development, and there will always be a relevance to parking the bus and having two attacks that lead to two shots, that lead to two goals in a game. That's never going to go away. It's never going to be irrelevant. Mourinho will always have some tactical relevant, not that he's entirely confined by just that one style of play, but if we pretend that he is a caricature of himself, then that would still remain relevant and useful and a viable means of winning, maybe less and less a viable means of winning leagues, but will always remain a way to win the Champions League, a way to win the FA Cup, a way to win the League Cup, a way to win, and even more so in international football, which is always on a delay and always at a disadvantage in terms of preparation time. You know, we saw a woeful to watch, uninspiring, drab, functional Portugal side win the Euros by attacking very, very rarely with one player. So yeah, it's never going to go away. I just think that, I mean, there was this, and I've talked about this before on the podcast as well, there was this interesting situation, I guess maybe a year ago, where it was like, if Manchester City, a possession team, and Liverpool, more of a counter-attack team, are the two best teams in the world, but neither are quite complete because City struggle against the very best sides in the world, and Liverpool struggle to be perfectly consistent against, you know, Saturday 3 p.m. kickoffs, away up and down the country, who is going to be the team to become complete? Will City get better off the ball, or will Liverpool get better on the ball? And my best guess would be that Guardiola would tweak his pressing game so that he turned the ball over and was more happy to contest more evenly possession in the Champions League quarter and semi-finals, and the Klopp would not develop a possession game. And I was wrong, because Klopp has improved his team's possession and spatial occupation, but he's also found more and more ways to sort of synthetically create a counter-attack opportunity, and he's found the third way around it, which is to simply have two of the best crossing fullbacks in the world and just spam the ball into the box for 90 minutes. So, what's the question? Do you think counter-attacking football is statistically worse strategy than people thought? It's worse than people thought, but it's certainly not bad.
You pinned me to the post with Liverpool. I was just about to reference them as you were talking, because what I was going to say was, is it not better to be able to do everything? Like, that's the ultimate goal, isn't it?
Sure. Is that possible? Have we seen that example?
Well, I think it's a matter of longevity. I think it's a matter of giving a coach time. And I think that's been one of the benefits that Jurgen Klopp's had. He started off with this counter-pressing style and counter-attacking style, and has slowly developed that over time. And you know, we could say that Pochettino did the same at Spurs. He changed the way he played. The difference with Pochettino is he didn't retain the press as much as Klopp did.
I think he paid a price for it. I was calling for it for a long time, saying we've got to add another string to our bow, and we did, and I think we couldn't return
yes.
to the way it was before.
With us, maybe it was to do with the personnel. Liverpool really bought well and supplemented their squad with players who can help the possession game. We didn't necessarily continue to build a squad that could do the things we needed to do. Pochettino clearly had ideas about developing the style. That I would say the problem we have with Poch always was that he could be a bit of an ideologue and wouldn't necessarily adapt on a game by game basis, or perhaps wasn't capable of adapting. And so we found quite often that when we came up against certain teams, Liverpool being one, that we really struggled and we had no answer to it time after time after time after time. But you could kind of, you had an idea of what he was trying to achieve, and maybe you do have to be able to do everything. Liverpool are brilliant at counter-attacking. They're also now really good at possession-based football. And when you are a club of a certain size that wants to win leagues, you have to be able to do a bit of both. And Man City are good at counter-attacking to a degree.
They're certainly not bad.
They're ruthless. But it's hard. Like, you've only got a limited amount of time in the training pitch. You have two high-level games a week to prepare for. Where do you do all that, like, implementation of a plan? It's really, really hard. So managers do end up prioritising.
I think on this, counter-attacking comes down a lot more to intelligence of footballers. I think if you look at under Pochettino, we were an exceptional counter-attacking team, and generally we did that with our slowest forwards, who were Eriksen, Dele and Kane. If you take out Eriksen and Dele and then replace that with Lucas and Son, or perhaps Lucas and Bergwijn, who are faster than Dele and Eriksen, are they better counter-attackers? I don't think so. So I think a lot of the time counter-attacking is down to player initiative. The Bayern team, choice of pass, of course. The Bayern team, Ribery, Robin, Alaba, Lahm was formidable, and Mourinho's Real Madrid team was incredible counter-attacking, and they were able to take the league off Barcelona by utilising that. I do think sometimes when we talk about counter-attacking, people get a bit negative about it and think it's parking the bus. Like, you wouldn't, like, bus parkers like Burnley, for example, they're not counter-attacking teams. I think it's a model of playing. I don't think we should base our team primarily on counter-attacking like Leicester did when they won the league. I don't think that's a sustainable method. But if we do become more counter-attacking, which seemed to have happened towards the end of this lockdown period, then I don't have a problem with that. Of course, being a football, if you could pick a football team, I would love Spurs to have the ball for 99% of the game and just pass the opposition to death and kill them that way. But I think, like you said, the best teams are able to marry the two together, and hopefully we sign players and we develop a system that can get close to it. But I don't think we're going to be exceptional one way or the other like Liverpool, Man City are.
Good chat, boys. That was a very philosophical place to end. So we're going to keep the content coming over the next few weeks. We've got the All or Nothing documentary, which we're going to talk about. We'll do some dedicated episodes on that. We've also got, hopefully in the next week or two, a joint podcast with our friends at Wheeler Dinner Radio, who are an American Spurs podcast who do a great job. We really like them. And so I've spoken to Skipjack, their host, about us joining forces and doing something together. So we're hoping to set that up. That'll be a lot of fun, I'm sure. But we'll keep you going content wise. Don't worry, we got you.
And soon we're going to have a very, very special announcement.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindner. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.